The Agentic Memory Reading Path, 3 of 5. In 2023, an agent named Voyager taught itself to play Minecraft by writing its own skills, storing them in a library, and reusing them. It unlocked the game's tech tree up to 15 times faster than anything before it, and when you dropped it into a brand new world, it carried its skills with it and kept going while other agents froze. It looked like the future of how machines learn. Do something once, distill it into a reusable skill, never relearn it. 3 years later, a benchmark called Skill Evil Bench tested that dream rigorously and found something that should unsettle anyone building on it. The distilled skills often performed worse than just keeping the raw transcript of what the agent did. The polished skill library, the thing everyone is building, frequently lost to the messy log it was supposed to replace. This episode is about procedural memory, how agents remember not facts, but how to do things, and about why the obvious way to do it might be wrong. Welcome back. This is Ep 3. We have done facts. Episodes 1 and 2 were about semantic and episodic memory, what happened and what's true. This episode is the third leg of the cognitive triad from Koala, procedural memory, skills, routines, the agent's growing repertoire of how to. Our reading path gives us three papers that form a perfect arc. Voyager, the origin, where the skill library dream was born. Agent workflow memory, the maturation, where the idea got disciplined and proven on real web tasks. And Skill Evil Bench, the reckoning, a 2026 benchmark built specifically to test whether skill distillation actually works, with results that are going to change how you think about every coding agent you use. And because this is the part of the field closest to the tools we all use daily, we will spend real time on what it means for coding agents specifically. Voyager, from Guanji Wang and colleagues, is one of the most cited agent papers of its era, north of 700 citations, and for good reason. It was the first language model-powered agent that did open-ended lifelong learning in Minecraft, with no human in the loop, and it had three parts worth remembering. 1. An automatic curriculum that proposed increasingly hard tasks to maximize exploration, so the agent set its own goals, the proactive exploration we flagged in Episode 1. Crucially, the curriculum adapts to what the agent can currently do, proposing the next reachable challenge rather than a fixed syllabus, which is how it keeps making progress without a human steering. 2. An ever-growing skill library of executable code, where each skill is a program the agent wrote to accomplish something, stored and indexed by a description of what it does, so it can be retrieved by meaning and composed, simpler skills called by more cox ones, into increasingly sophisticated behavior. 3. An iterative prompting loop that fed back environment feedback, execution errors, and self-verification, so the agent ran its code, saw it fail, read the error, and rewrote it until it worked, only then committing the skill to the library. That self-verification gate matters. It means the library fills with skills that actually ran, not skills that merely looked plausible. Critically, Voyager did all this through black box calls to GPT-4. No fine-tuning, no model weights touched. The learning lived entirely in the skill library, in the harness, not in the model. That is a profound design statement, and it's the one the rest of this episode interrogates. It says capability can be accumulated outside the model, in an editable store of skills, which is exactly the premise behind every self-improving agent and every coding agent that saves reusable commands today. If it's true, you can make a frozen model smarter just by giving it a better library. Whether that premise actually holds, under honest measurement, is the question that dates by the end of this episode. The results were striking. 3.3 times more unique items collected, 2.3 times longer distances traveled, tech tree milestones up to 15.3 times faster than the prior state of the art. And the headline capability, the skill library transferred. Drop Voyager into a fresh Minecraft world, and it reused its learned skills to solve new tasks from scratch, while other methods struggled to generalize. And here is the line from the Voyager paper that planted a flag for the whole field. The authors argued that because the skills are temporally extended, interpretable, and compositional, they compound the agent's abilities and, in their words, alleviate catastrophic forgetting. That is the dream in one sentence. a library of code skills as a form of memory that never degrades, only grows, and carries from world to world. Everything in this episode is a stress test of that sentence. Before we get to the disciplined version of the skill library idea, draw a distinction the field has settled into, because it determines how procedural memory fails. There are two species of stored skill, and they are genuinely different animals. The first species is the executable code skill, the Voyager kind. A skill is a program. It either runs or it doesn't. When it fails loudly, a compilation error, an exception, a wrong result you can verify against the environment. That's a feature. You can put a self-verification gate in front of the library and only admit skills that demonstrably worked. But code skills are brittle in their own way. They fail at composition. When you try to snap two of them together, and the interfaces don't quite match, and they're tied to the specific tools and APIs they were written against. The second species is the natural language workflow, the kind we're about to see in agent workflow memory. Here a skill is not code, it's a described routine, a remembered procedure in words, to book travel, first search flights, then compare against the calendar, then confirm before paying. These are flexible. They transfer across surface changes. They read like instructions a human could follow. But they fail differently and more quietly. They fail through ambiguity and instruction drift. The agent reads the workflow, interprets it a little loosely, and wanders off the procedure without any error firing. Nothing crashes. The result is just subtly wrong. Why does this matter for a benchmark and for you? Because the two species need different evaluation and different guardrails. Code skills need execution-grounded verification. Run it. Check it. Workflow skills need process checking. Did the agent actually follow the steps, not just did the answer look right? A benchmark that only handles one species misses half the field, and a coding agent that mixes both, saved code snippets plus remembered conventions in prose, has both failure modes at once. Hold this distinction. It's the lens for everything that follows. Voyager was a proof of concept in a game. The next paper, Agent Workflow Memory by Zhiro Wang and colleagues, took the skill library idea and made it work on something messier and more real, web navigation. The reframing is subtle but important. Instead of a library of executable code, Agent Workflow Memory induces workflows, reusable routines, commonly repeated patterns of action, extracted from past experience and selectively fed back to guide future behavior. So there are now two flavors of procedural memory in play, and they fail differently. Voyager-style executable code skills fail with compilation and composition errors. Natural language workflows and routines fail with ambiguity and instruction drift. A benchmark has to handle both because the field is split between them. What makes agent workflow memory rigorous is the offline and online distinction. Offline, the agent induces workflows from training examples ahead of time. Online, and this is the clever part, it induces workflows on the fly from its own test time experience with no training set at all. They tested on two big web benchmarks, Mind2Web and WebArena, collectively over 1,000 tasks across 200 plus domains, travel, shopping, social media. The numbers, a 24.6% relative improvement on Mind2Web, and a 51.1% relative improvement on WebArena, while also reducing the number of steps to finish a task. But the most important result is about generalization, and it is the one to hold on to. Online agent workflow memory got better, relative to the baseline, as the gap between training and test tasks widened, surpassing baselines by 8.9 to 14 absolute points as that distribution gap grew. Read that again. The more novel the situation, the more the accumulated workflow memory helped. That is exactly the property you want from memory, and exactly the property the next paper says is harder to achieve than it looks. Now the reckoning. Skill Evil Bench by Yingti Lei and colleagues 2026 is a diagnostic benchmark built to answer one precise question. When an agent accumulates rich episodic experience, can that actually be distilled into reusable procedural skills? Not does the score go up, but did real durable skill formation happen? The design is the most careful in the whole series, so let me lay it out, because the design is the contribution. 180 tasks across 6 real-world agent environments, organized into role-conditioned task families that share a hidden, latent procedure. meaning each family is a set of tasks that all require the same underlying how-to, dressed in different surface details, so the benchmark can ask whether the agent learned the procedure or just memorized the surface. Within a family, there's a deliberate progression. During acquisition, the skill-forming phase, the agent sees variants designed to teach the procedure, a canonical version that presents it plainly, an enriched version that exposes a missing substep, a variant that changes the surface but keeps the procedure. The agent updates an external skill library using compacted trajectories and verifier feedback. Then, and this is the crucial move, the library is frozen and the agent faces deployment tasks it cannot adapt to. Those deployment tasks come in three flavors, each probing a different kind of robustness. Context shift, where the skill is needed in an unfamiliar setting. Adversarial shortcuts, where a shallow wrong answer is tempting and only a process check catches it. And composition, where the agent must combine skills it learned separately. Acquisition, then frozen deployment. This is the freeze then evaluate discipline we flagged back in episode 1, made into a benchmark, run across 10 model configurations and 3 different agent harnesses. So the findings aren't an artifact of one setup. And then the controls, which are what make the findings trustworthy. Skill Eval Bench compares the agent's self-generated skills against 4 baselines: a no-skill control, a raw trajectory control, a curated start condition, and self-generated evolution. By holding the answering model fixed and varying only the skill condition, it can separate genuine procedural abstraction from 3 confounds: the base model's raw capability, prior curated knowledge, and mere reuse of episodic traces. The findings, across 10 model configurations and 3 agent harnesses. First, current agents often adapt locally, but rarely form robust, reusable skills. Skill conditions can help during acquisition or replay, but the gains are unstable once the library is frozen for deployment. Second, the gut punch. Raw trajectory reuse frequently outperforms distilled skills. Keeping the messy transcript of what you did beats the clean skill you extracted from it. The author's interpretation is precise. Distillation discards contextual and procedural cues that turn out to be useful later. Abstraction is lossy, and it throws away exactly the details that would have helped in the novel case. And third, the capacity finding. Writing more skills or building bigger skill libraries is not the answer. More updates can improve coverage while introducing episode-specific drift and procedural clutter. The library fills up with junk that fit one situation and pollutes the rest. Put Voyager, Agent Workflow Memory, and Skill Eval Bench in a line and you get the field's actual trajectory. The dream, skills as perfect, compounding, transferable memory. The disciplined version, yes, induced workflows really do help, especially as tasks get novel. The reckoning, but only if you measure honestly, with a frozen library and a raw trajectory control, because a lot of what looks like skill formation is just local adaptation or the base model being good, and the polished abstraction often loses to the raw trace. Sit a moment longer with Skill Eval Bench's third finding, the capacity result, because it overturns the most intuitive thing you'd assume about a skill library, that more is better. The benchmark found that writing more skills or provisioning a larger resource library is not sufficient and can actively hurt. Additional updates improve coverage, the library can handle more cases, but they also introduce episode-specific drift and procedural clutter. The library fills with skills that fit one peculiar situation, that overlap and conflict with each other, that the retriever now has to wade through. Coverage goes up, quality and findability go down. This reframes the skill library from an asset you accumulate into an organism you have to keep healthy, and the field is starting to treat library health as a measured quantity in its own right. The metrics that matter, the raw size of the library, its growth rate, how much of it is redundant or near duplicate, and what fraction of retrievals actually hit a high-value, frequently reused skill versus pulling up clutter. A library that grows without bound, where most skills are never reused, is not a richer agent. It's a polluted index that gets slower and less accurate over time. Some research systems address this directly by co-managing 3 things at once: which skills to select, which to actually use, and which to distill or merge, on the theory that without active maintenance, the library accrues drift until it saturates and caps performance. The parallel to ordinary software is exact and worth stating because it makes the discipline obvious. An ever-growing skill library with no curation is technical debt. It is a code base nobody refactors, a utils folder where every function was added by a different intern, and half are near duplicates, and none have tests for whether they're still used. You would never let your actual code base grow that way. The finding here is that an agent's procedural memory needs the same hygiene, dead skill elimination, deduplication, periodic consolidation that you'd apply to any code you intend to maintain. Accumulation is not learning. Curated accumulation, maybe. This is the episode where the research touches your daily tools directly, because a coding agent's skill library is exactly this problem. When your agent writes a reusable helper, saves a skill or a command, or distills a past session into a reusable instruction file, it is doing procedural memory, and skill level bench's warning applies to it directly. The industry has been converging on context engineering as the discipline here. Martin Fowler published a substantial piece this year on context engineering for coding agents, framing long-term memory as one of roughly seven things competing for the context window every step, which means you cannot design skill memory in isolation from the rest of the budget. And a paper from this spring, Codified Context, Infrastructure for AI Agents in a Complex Codebase, names the failure mode in plain language. Agentic coding assistants lack persistent memory, so they lose coherence across sessions, forget project conventions, and repeat mistakes they were already corrected on. Every one of those is a procedural memory failure. Now layer skill-level bench's findings on top, because they are quietly subversive for how we build coding agents. If raw trajectory reuse often beats distilled skills, then the instinct to aggressively summarize a successful session into a tidy reusable rule may be actively counterproductive. The messy transcript of how the agent actually fixed the bug, with all its false starts and environment-specific details, may transfer better than the clean three-line lesson you extracted. And if bigger skill libraries accrue drift and clutter, then an ever-growing folder of saved skills and commands is not a free win. It is a maintenance liability that pollutes retrieval over time. Library health, its size, its growth rate, how often each skill actually gets used, becomes a thing you have to measure and prune, not just accumulate. There is research pushing on this directly. A system called MemSkill reframes memory operations themselves as learnable rather than hand-coded, on the theory that fixed, human-designed extraction rules are too rigid across diverse interaction patterns. That is the same instinct as AMEM from last episode. Stop hard-coding what to store and how. But the honest state of things per skill evil bench is that we do not yet have a reliable recipe for turning one-off coding experience into durable, transferable skill. The practical advice that falls out, keep your raw transcripts, be skeptical of aggressive distillation, treat your skill library like a code base that needs weeding, and measure whether a saved skill actually gets reused before you trust that it is helping. So where does the procedural memory story leave us? The dream is real, but conditional. Voyager and agent workflow memory prove that procedural memory can compound an agent's abilities and can generalize to novel tasks. That is not in doubt. What is in doubt is whether your particular skill distillation pipeline is actually capturing durable skill or just riding the base model and local adaptation. The measurement is the whole game. Skill Evil Bench's contribution is not a system, it is a method. Freeze the library, add a raw trajectory control, add a no-skill control, test on context shift and adversarial composition. Without those controls, you will overclaim. You will credit your skill memory for gains that came from somewhere else. Raw often beats refined. The single most actionable finding in this episode is that distillation is lossy in a way that hurts exactly when you need help most, on novel tasks. Retain the raw experience. Treat the distilled skill as a fallible, rebuildable layer on top, never as a replacement for the trace. This is the same lesson as facts from episode 2, now proven for skills. And library health is a measurable quantity. Size, growth rate, drift, clutter, high-frequency skill coverage. A skill library is not a junk drawer you keep adding to. It is a living store that degrades without curation. The The deepest open problem and the bridge to the next two episodes is attribution. How do you know your gain came from the skill and not the base model? How do you know the right skill was retrieved for the right reason? Those questions turn out to be a crisis in their own right, and that crisis is episode 4. Procedural memory is where the gap between the demo and the science is widest. Voyager dazzled, agent workflow memory delivered rigorously, and Skill Evil Bench held the whole idea to the fire and found that raw experience often beats the skill we distill from it, and that bigger libraries can make things worse, not better. Next episode is the one underneath all the others, the measurement crisis. Three 2026 papers, each exposing a different way our benchmarks quietly lie to us. How the choice of what counts as the right answer can flip your rankings. How answer-level scores hide retrieval failures. And how updating your agent's harness gets confused with actually benefiting from it. If you build or buy memory systems, this is the episode that will change how you read every number you are shown. See you there.